Welcome to the Where Do Gays Retire podcast, where we help you in the LGBTQ plus community find a safe and affordable retirement place. Join Mark Goldstein as he interviews others who live in gay-friendly places around the globe. Learn about the climate, cost of living, healthcare, crime and safety, and more. Now, here's your host, Mark Goldstein.
Today, our journey takes us to New Orleans, Louisiana. We have two special guests with us today. We have Jim Meadows and we have Joe Fay. I'll tell you a little bit about Jim first, and then we'll tell you about Joe. So Jim Meadows is a MSW. And by the way, is that Master of Social Work?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay. And is the executive director of New Orleans Advocates for the LGBTQ plus elders called No Age. In addition to his work with No Age, he is the secretary for the LGBT Archives Project of Louisiana, and he serves on the board of directors of A Home Among Friends, which aims to provide affordable housing to low-income LGBT seniors in New Orleans. He is the vice president of the New Orleans Steamboat Club, one of the oldest gay social clubs in America. He is particularly interested in providing support to LGBTQ elders and in preserving the history and legacy of the New Orleans LGBTQ community. Okay, and now we have Joe. Joe Fay is the founder of A Home Among Friends, a 501c3 created to provide affordable housing for very low-income LGBTQ seniors. We believe communities that are modest in scope work best to create not just housing, but home for older folks who deserve as much as anyone to enjoy their golden years in a safe, welcoming environment. Joe spent 30 years in nonprofit sectors, including in senior management and leadership. He is the graduate of Boston College and Columbia University's Graduate School of Business. He served as a U.S. Navy Supply Corps officer between college and graduate school. He is and his longtime partner were recently married in New Orleans. Congratulations.
Thank you.
They live in the Irish Channel in a restored Italianate home dated from the 1880s. Wow. Okay. Welcome, gentlemen. Welcome to the podcast. Thank you so much for coming. Yeah, sure. And let's start off, Jim, tell us a little bit about No Age and the nonprofit that you currently work for.
Yeah, sure. Thanks for having us, Mark. Just real quick, I'm secretary for the LGBT plus Archives Project of Louisiana, which is another organization that's really near and dear to my heart. But yeah, so No Age, it's kind of two branches of what we do. On one hand, we have social events for LGBT seniors who, as you may know, tend to be more isolated over time, tend to live in poverty, tend to lack a caregiver. So we're trying to create opportunities for those folks to socialize and build new social connections, maintain existing ones. And we do that through events like our monthly potlucks, walking groups, movie nights, book clubs, coffee talks, and other various events of that nature. The other branch of what we do is education. So we provide cultural competence trainings for healthcare and other service providers who work with elders. For example, a training at a long-term care facility for their staff and administration to tell them why, for example, someone might want to go back in the closet when they go into long-term care. Yeah, so it's two sides. It's the socialization and education. And that's pretty much what we do, Mark.
Jim, we need more Jims in the country or in this world. You do a lot for the LGBTQ community because some seniors do have it tough and find it very difficult because they are alone. They might have lost their loved ones. And going into a nursing home is not the best thing in the first place. And for an LGBTQ senior, especially going back into the closet, is not something that we want to do. So I give you kudos, commend you for all your efforts that you do for us. Thank you.
Thank you.
You're welcome. And Joe, tell us about a home among friends. Give us a synopsis of what goes on there.
So at some level, what we're doing is very much akin to what Jim does in a fairly specific way. We know that LGBTQ seniors suffer from isolation. We know that large parts of our population have lower incomes as a result of discrimination through the course of their careers. They have poorer health outcomes if they are isolated. And our solution to that problem is to create small communities embedded in existing neighborhoods, repurposing existing housing. There are roughly 6,000 vacant houses in New Orleans now, any one of which could be repurposed into a small community, which we believe is the best place for LGBTQ seniors to be, because they're able in that way and in that environment to form friendships. So they have not just housing, which is tremendously important, but also a place to call home. And we are in the, I would say, startup phase of this, in the sense that we were a 501c3. We have a board that we are thrilled to have the services of, and we are this year focused on gaining visibility and credibility among the population in the LGBT community that might have the resources to help us fund a demonstration project of this initiative in New Orleans.
So Joe, tell us, why are there so many vacant homes? Is it because of Katrina?
I think that must be part of it. If you drive around New Orleans, you see lots of vacant lots, lots of vacant buildings, both industrial, commercial, and housing. New Orleans has also lost a substantial portion of its population in the last 15 years. I think we're down 80,000 people on a base of about 450, and that was both as a result of Katrina, but also other factors, increasing homeowners insurance, increasing costs, although our housing cost continues to be, in my experience, very modest compared to many other places, and also just an outflight of population into the suburbs. Look, people leave their houses behind.
I see. So what you want to do is take these vacant homes and create an LGBTQ community for seniors.
Right. What we've been able to determine based on a lot of discussions with various city organizations is that we have the ability. There's a traditional housing model here called a shotgun, which is basically four or five rooms straight in a row. And that's a common housing configuration here. We know by having spoken with public officials that we're able to convert those, which would be either a one family or two family unit now, into 4 to 6 units. And in doing so, provide each of the residents with a two room suite with their own bathroom, their own kitchen, and then build around that facility gardens and gathering places that allow the residents to have a community.
Gotcha. All right. Well, it's very important that our seniors have a place to live and a place to stay that's affordable. It's very rare that you find those places anywhere these days. So I commend you, and it's very important what you're doing as well. Thank you so much for trying to get this off the ground. I hope it does get off the ground, and I hope we see some traction going forward sometime next year or this year. When do you intend to take it live, so to speak?
We hope to take it live in 2024. There are a number of other housing facilities not like this, but there are in some of the major cities LGBTQ housing. There are two challenges to that. One is that they in no way meet the need that exists for low-income housing. The second challenge is that in smaller cities like New Orleans, it's extremely unlikely that we'd ever have the resources to build something that large. Not just New Orleans, but Nashville, Louisville, Charleston, Cincinnati, Columbus, Ohio, Denver, all of those are candidates for this kind of housing, repurposing existing housing in existing neighborhoods of a small scale that allow people to live together.
Excellent. Excellent. And Jim, you're on the board of that organization, Home Among Friends?
Yes, I'm the most recent addition.
Okay. So that's great. You guys are going to be working together.
Mm-hmm.
Excellent. So I thought we'd talk before we get into the nitty gritty and the questions about how and where and why we want to retire to New Orleans. We'll get into some fun stuff about New Orleans. We'll talk about, let's start off with the history, because it's always good to start off with the history of New Orleans, of gay New Orleans. We'll talk a little bit about Mardi Gras cruise, the gay carnival, LGBT related events, cultural events and festivals in the LGBTQ community, LGBT organizations and social groups in New Orleans. We'll talk a little bit about the friendliest bars in New Orleans, alternatives also to the bar scene, dining and music. And so music is a very important part of New Orleans culture as well. Gentlemen, Jim, you want to start us off and tell us a little bit about the gay New Orleans history?
Sure. Well, New Orleans was founded around 1718, and I think the first reference to homosexuality was about 6 years later. A captain of a ship got in trouble with his cabin boy, and that didn't end up well for them. But from then on out, there's always been gay people in New Orleans. It's a port city. It's people traveling in and out, and like with San Francisco and New York, these port cities tend to draw the gays, and here we are still today.
Excellent. Excellent. Joe, you have anything? Just feel free to chime in if you have anything to add to that as well.
Only that I think because of its cosmopolitan nature, Jim alluded to the fact that we're a port city, we've always been a welcoming city where differences are embraced and supported and appreciated.
Got it. Yes.
Yeah, I'd say that New Orleans was maybe a little bit behind the times when it came to the gay liberation movement in the 70s. That didn't really get off the ground here until Anita Bryant came to visit and brought thousands of protesters when she came. And that from that spring, the first pride events and political action committees, LAGPAC was the first one in Louisiana. So we were kind of late to the political party. And part of that is because for all of its Louisiana dirty politics, most New Orleanians aren't as political activist natured, and that's a generalization. But we kind of like to party
more than we noticed.
To argue. Yeah,
I've noticed that. So yeah, I could see a good time with Anita Bryan throwing some pies in her face. So that would have been a good time. Okay. How about, tell us about, is there anything else that you want to add with the history at all?
I could talk about the history stuff forever, but I would mention that one thing that we have in New Orleans that's unique is Mardi Gras. It's not completely unique. There's carnival around the world, but what we have is gay carnival. And that began in 1953, the first gay men's organization in New Orleans was found. It was called the Steamboat Club. That's still active right now. It's the longest continually operating social club for gay men. And a lot of the folks who founded that went on to found some of the gay Mardi Gras crews. And so every year, these crews will host these lavish balls with really impressive stage tableaus, and people are lining up to get tickets to see those. It's kind of an event you have to see yourself to really get an idea of, but it's pretty fabulous. I'm sure Joe's been to some since he's been in town.
I have, and they are awesome. And to piggyback on Jim's earlier point, I think one of the challenges that New Orleans faces apropos political activism is that people do spend a lot of time on making tableaus and making costumes and preparing for Mardi Gras and doing lots of other things that are lots of fun. But compared to other cities where I've lived, there's decidedly less political activism here. And that, so that's two sides of the coin. On the one hand, people have a really good time, and the Mardi Gras balls that we have, and there are many of them, are fabulous. And on the other hand, because we're spending all our time doing that, we're not spending our time doing other things.
Yeah, it has its good and its bad.
Yeah.
I mean, that being said, we do have Forum for Equality. It's headquartered here in town that does a lot of lobbying at the state level and some other political groups like Louisiana Trans Advocates and various others. So it exists. It's just, this New Orleans is more of a party city.
Yes. Yeah. Well, for our audience, you mentioned Mardi Gras cruise. Now, cruise is spelled with a K, K-R-E-W-E-S. Can you explain to our audience what a Mardi Gras crew actually is? Is it a crew of people?
It's a group of people. I think in the beginning it was all men, all white men. That has changed in the years since. But they get together at their clubs and they work together to put together these costumes and crafting very elaborate outfits. If you Google New Orleans Carnival. Oh, if you want to really see it, watch the documentary called The Sons of Tennessee Williams, which really gets into the history and shows some of the videos of what those events are like when they put them on during carnival season, which begins here. It's not Mardi Gras Day that it starts. It's 12th night is the kickoff of carnival season. So we have a couple of months where it's just parties every weekend. Well, I mean, that doesn't really change during the year either, but specific parties for Mardi Gras. And these balls are just one aspect of that.
And the gay balls and the gay crews are just a subset of the much larger Mardi Gras initiative, which, as Jim alluded to, starts 12th night. So we go almost directly from New Year's Eve into 12th night celebrations that start the Mardi Gras season. The straight crews parade along the main thoroughfares. Starting about 2 weeks before Mardi Gras Day, they parade in almost nightly. And they also have elaborate balls of their own. So the gay balls, because the gay crews don't parade, to my knowledge, Jim can correct me on that if I'm wrong.
No, that's right.
They also have balls, and we have balls. And so our balls were probably in response to their balls at some level.
Who has bigger balls? No, just kidding.
Oh, no. These uptown balls, it's the wealthy debutante class. The gay carnival balls began as a send-up of these debutante women. But it's evolved beyond that to have different themes. We've got so many different groups. There's the Lords of Leather puts on one of the most fantastic ones, leather themed party. You can imagine that one is the most fun. The other one that's up there is Arminius, my favorite as well.
Yeah, I've been to both of them. They're both fun, although Lords of Leather is more provocative, I think it's fair to say.
Got it. So there's other LGBT related festivals or events. I know there's Decadence, right? What
coming
is that?
Up next weekend.
What is that?
Jim?
Is it very decadent?
Can you describe it?
Yeah, so each year on Labor Day weekend is Southern Decadence. And that started in, I believe, 1973. A group of bohemian friends living on the edge of the quarter got together and said, we're going to put on a parade and we're going to have a party at the house. And from that, each year, it wasn't just gay people, it was straights and gays living together in this one house. But over time, it became more associated with the gay community. And the highlight of it is a parade on that Sunday. but there's also all kinds of events throughout town. I mean, basically you just walk out on the street in the quarter, in the gay area, the French Quarter or the Marigny, and you're going to see all kinds of things, Mark. It's not quite as wild, at least in the streets, as it was when I first moved here at 17 in 1996. But believe me, I got an eyeful when I first came. But it's very decadent. It's lots of fun. It's not family friendly, and we like it that way.
Gotcha.
And it's also limited geographically within the city. I think that's fair. The French Quarter, the Marigny, Bywater, where there are large populations of LGBTQ folk. If you were to venture out from those areas to the area where either Jim or I live, you probably wouldn't be quite as welcome.
Right.
Depending on your attire.
And Mark, it's actually one of the biggest events that happens in this. It brings in $250 million to the city.
Wow.
in revenue. So years ago, when it was a lot more wild, that I think that was because it was pre-sponsorship and people wanting to sponsor the gays and have rainbow flags on their businesses. And so it was a lot more fun. But what's happened is the city realized, hey, this is bringing a lot of money here for us. Let's figure out how we can keep this going, but not get people arrested.
I'm trying to think in my own mind, how could it be wilder? What went on in the wilder days?
We can't talk about that.
I don't know what kind of show this is, but
no, that's okay. It's not rated.
Anything you can imagine.
PG, but you know.
Anything you can imagine.
One of the things that's interesting to me is that the best restaurants in town have drag brunches. They have many drag brunches over Southern Decadence, but they have them throughout the year. Drag is different than, or is a piece of the LGBTQ community. But nevertheless, to me, coming from many other cities, this is the place where that sector of our folk are most embraced by the most number of people. I know some uptown people, I don't know a lot, I don't know really what the uptown debutante straight community thinks of us, but they at the very least embrace us at some points. And Jim's right. This event makes a lot of money for the city. If you look in the Times-Picayune, which is our daily newspaper, it is one of the things that's highlighted as an event that's coming up over Labor Day weekend, because publishers know that people are interested.
I know you get people from all over the country coming in, because I know some friends from Connecticut that every year, it's Southern Decadence time.
Yep.
So they all fly in. And and they take pictures. It's kind of cool. All right. Any other festivals that go on that are worth noting during the year?
Well, I mean, we celebrate Pride in June like most people. We shouldn't celebrate it in June because it's too hot. But
yeah.
Right.
We
should take Palm Springs lead and do it in November.
November, yeah.
But the other thing is that we're really well integrated into all the events that go on. So there's one of the first Mardi Gras parades, Jim, correct me on this, is Chewbacca's over in Bywater. And Chewbacca's is a more of a riffraff parade that isn't on the main parade route. But if you go there, you will see many, many LGBTQ folk participating in that. And I think that's true throughout the festivals around the year. I'm trying to think of we have a 12th night party every year. I'm trying to think of, and then we have Jim's event, which is a big fundraiser for him that comes up in November. We have the HRC Gala, which happens in September. Forum for Equality puts on a big dinner in October. And add to that all the things that everyone else does. It's a very busy place to live.
And when you mentioned Jim's event, is that for No Age?
Yes.
We have a fundraiser gala each year, the Friday before Thanksgiving.
Which this year is going to be at the newly renovated aquarium, I think.
That's right. Yeah, the Autumn.
It's one of those events that everyone feels they must go to, but they also want to go to because it's a really good time.
Cool. Cool. Sounds great. So besides the cultural events and festivals, how about the LGBTQ organizations? Are there many other than yourselves, what you two have in New Orleans?
Jim?
There's a great many for a town of this size. Unfortunately, for many years, there was an LGBT community center. It moved after Hurricane Katrina, and it kind of struggled for a long time, and they closed recently. So at the moment, we don't have a community center. So a lot of the organizations are kind of scattered a bit more than they once were. But yes, there are groups for youth, groups for elders, groups for everyone in between. All kinds of affiliation groups and lifestyles, anything you
there's
can.
There's a sports group that has a series of sports that they support. But as you can imagine, it's not like New York or DC or LA or San Francisco. We're a much smaller place.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. Let's talk about bars. There's so many of them in New Orleans, especially in the French Quarter. What are your friendliest go-to bars?
I like the Townhouse, which is I think it's a fairly new bar. It's nice. It's friendly. I will spend whatever time I spend at Southern Decadence at the Phoenix, which tends to be for the older gay, lesbian, bear leather community.
Okay. How about you, Joe?
I love the Phoenix. It's the one of the coolest bars. Very, very friendly, welcoming. The leather people are just the best people. I don't know why it is, but they're the nicest people, the most down to earth. I also really like the Corner Pocket because I like a little raunch. It's John Waters' favorite bar in America, and it has boys dancing on the bar. New Meat Night on Fridays. It's always a blast. Now, when I was younger, I loved going to Oz and the Pub, which are the dance clubs. I'd say Good Friends is one of the friendlier places. We have, there's a bit of contention about what's the oldest gay bar in America, but there is an argument to be had that the oldest one is Café Lafitte in Exile, which has been around, it's been the 40s or 50s, it's existed. So that's a friendly one.
Are they all in the Quarter?
Most of them are in the Quarter. There's some in the Marigny. There's only one bar in Uptown that's kind of a small place. But yeah, they tend to be in the Quarter and Marigny neighborhoods.
Okay. Now you mentioned also alternatives to some of the alternatives to the bar scene that the LGBTQ community can get involved in or are involved in?
So I go to and see a lot of friends at the cultural activity. So we have this awesome place called the Marigny Opera House, which was a desanctified church that was purchased by a couple of guys, married guys from New York. They came down, they renovated a church, and then they introduced a series of cultural events so you can buy a season's worth of tickets. It's called Opera Ballet, which preceded the bifurcation of formal opera and formal ballet back in the late 19th century, I think I'm right to say. But they continue to do opera ballet. So I see a lot of my friends there. There's the opera, which is a good little opera, attracts a lot of the gay community. I don't know about the symphony because we don't go, but any place we go for culture, we will see friends from both the straight and the gay community. Those of us who live here who want to embrace the cultural opportunities do so comfortably, and we find lots of other friends doing the same.
And I'd throw in that I think the No Age, we aim to be an alternative to the bar scene as well. Our events, sometimes people, it's harder to meet people at the bars now because people are just on apps and yep. like they're sitting at the bar, like typing on the app for someone who's at a different bar. but fire events are a more friendly and kind of atmosphere. I'm really proud that we give that people an opportunity to do something that's not drinking related. I know this town is known as an alcoholic town, and that's largely true in some ways, but it's also, you know, you can be sober in New Orleans and have a fantastic time.
Yes, I can attest to that you do not have to drink a lot and you can have a great time.
Yep, I'll have a coffee and a beignet. Yep. All right. So how about, let's get into a little bit about dining. New Orleans has tons of restaurants. I mean,
per capita, it's the best city in the country.
Yeah, you'll never run out. I've been there quite a few times, and every time I go, there's something different or something new. Tell us a little bit about the restaurant scene and dining in New Orleans.
Well, you're going to get fat if you're not careful. No, like you said, there's like a restaurant on every block here.
At least.
Yeah, I don't get out to as many as I once did. Some of my favorites are, I like Galatoire's in the Quarter. There's a little place uptown called Bistro Daisy that my partner and I love to go to. But it's innumerable. If you're a gourmand, then you will have fun here in town.
And so what's interesting to me, having lived in other places, is that the restaurants here, the great restaurants here, remain. Now, in Los Angeles, a great restaurant might last for 10 years or 15 years. Our restaurants last for 100 years. Galatoire's has been serving forever. Bistro Daisy has been around for a while now. Clancy's, which is a nice bar, but kind of a very uptown bar and restaurant, has been around forever. Dookie Chase, which is famous for its support for the Black community during the 60s, has been around forever. And there are, I mean, literally, we're six walking blocks from Commander's Palace, and you can go there and have an amazing meal. And the quality of the food and the quality of the service and the ambiance is, again, on a per capita basis, no one compares.
Got it. So you'll never run out of restaurant choices in New Orleans, that's for sure.
No, that's absolutely true.
No, you could eat out every night of the week and you would not even begin. Like for a year, you would just be scratching the surface. It's incredible.
That's true.
Yep, I hear you. How about music? New Orleans is known for music and jazz and stuff. So tell us a little bit about that.
Well, there's the Jazz Fest, obviously, in May, which brings in people from around the world. We always go, there's two weekends, so we always go one day each weekend. And you hear people that you'd never hear anyplace else, but it's not just jazz. It's jazz and blues and folk. And in many cases, some rock musicians as well. So that's a great place. They're preceding that, a few weeks before that, is something called the French Quarter Fest, which is local jazz blues players that appeal primarily to the locals, but we still get some out-of-town people. There's concerts all year round. There's probably 20 or 30 jazz clubs, each of which has nightly sessions. There's Preservation Jazz Hall, which just celebrated its 60th anniversary. Honestly, any kind of music you want. There's Tipitina's, which is an uptown place that we're going to see Yolo Tango there in a couple weeks. But it's remarkable. And the best thing for me, having come from bigger cities, is you can get to any of these places in 15 minutes.
Yeah, there's also every year the Essence Fest, which is one of the biggest events in town, and that brings in a lot of the R&B stars from around the world, and it's huge. But you know, as far as festivals go, there's a festival, you can't sling a cat without hitting a festival in this town. There's probably one happening a couple of blocks away from me. There's po' boy festivals and crawfish festivals and just anything that you can think of. There's always too many options for what you want to do on any given night, and especially during the weekend.
We just had the Satchmo Festival because Louis Armstrong was, as you probably know, born here and grew up here. And so they have a big festival for him every year. And it's interesting because there are so many musical veins that rose out of New Orleans that there are frequently festivals that are more modest in scope, but tend to a specific vein of our musical heritage. And they go on all year round.
Yeah, you definitely won't run out of things to do in New Orleans. Anything else that you'd like to add regarding music or nightlife?
We have some really, there's a street, St. Claude's Avenue, that my husband tells me years ago was not a great place to go, but now is kind of lined with these clubs that have interesting shows every week and frequently every night of the week, that kind of offbeat stuff that you wouldn't necessarily see. We, for example, saw a performance by a singer that did a Kurt Vile one-man show. It's not something you'd see in many other places. We also have Taylor Swift coming to town for three nights, filling the Superdome, right?
Yeah.
So all the big acts come here.
Labor Day, yeah. But I'd say that burlesque, is alive and well in New Orleans. The Always Lounge is a queer-friendly place that has some kind of burlesque show going on most nights.
All male?
They have some stuff they have male burlesque, they have female, they have non-binary, they've got everybody together. They've got jock lube wrestling on some nights of the week. Just anything you can imagine.
That's kind of interesting. Okay. So now we'll get into a little bit about New Orleans retirement and stuff like that. Tell us, how long have you both lived in New Orleans?
Well, I'll start. I moved here in 1996 to go to school. I grew up in a small town called Greensburg. But yeah, so I've been here, what is that, 26, 27 years almost?
It's a long time. And Joe?
I've been here 5 years next month. When I retired, we moved here because my husband is from here. And his father is still living and well, and so we wanted to be here with his family.
Got it. That's a long, 5 years is a long time. I've been here in Phoenix for 5 years. And Jim, you're like, you might as well be born there. You're there so long. Very cool. Tell us a little bit about where New Orleans is in the state of Louisiana geographically.
Well, it's towards the end of the Mississippi River. Not the very end, but that's kind of basically where we're located. They call us the Crescent City because the river kind of snakes around and makes a crescent shape. But Southeast Louisiana in general is where we are.
And if you look at Louisiana, people describe it as a boot. So we're in the toe of the boot.
There you go.
Okay. Sounds a little bit like Italy.
Yeah.
Okay. Tell us about the climate. Well, I know it's hot and humid. I've been there. I've been there when it was hot and humid, and remember it was very hot and humid walking around Lake Pontchartrain. So tell us a little bit about the summers. How hot does it get? How about the winters? Does it cool off?
So we're going through a heat wave right now. It's supposed to get to be 102 today. Oh. And we've had a summer of very hot weather. More commonly, it's hot and we'll get a rain shower in the afternoon. And hot runs from May through September with probably a little bit of October thrown in. And it's just hot and humid.
Yeah. It's like Florida weather, right?
I would stretch that further than September. It can be quite hot throughout the fall. But I think what we're seeing right now, Mark, is it's like unlike anything I've ever lived through. I've been in Louisiana all my life. I'm 44. I've never lived through a summer this hot, but I don't think I'm alone in that, and that we're alone with that here.
You're not.
In Louisiana. But, you know, if we can talk about a normal, we have, you know, fairly mild winters, and the couple of weeks of spring and fall we get are just like my favorite time of year, and you just cling to them. If you want to visit New Orleans, don't come during the summer. Come during like carnival season. It's fairly temperate. Come for Halloween or the holidays, you know, Thanksgiving, Christmas, New Year's. Those times are the best time to come visit. Never come in July or August, unless you're coming to Southern Decadence on Labor Day weekend. then there's an exception.
Then you take off all your clothes anyway.
Well, they're not wearing any clothes anyway, so it's fine. Yeah.
But mid-October through mid-April, at least, are nice times to be here. I don't think we've had snow in at least a few years, and it's very rare. It never gets below 40, and which is good because the old houses generally aren't well insulated. But we have very modest winters compared to every place else I've lived.
Now, that being said, when it's 40 degrees in New Orleans, it feels like 15 degrees in Minnesota. I've spent winters in the Midwest and it was -0. And I'm like, okay, this isn't really so bad. If it's 20 in New Orleans or 30 in New Orleans, it feels really cold. Just throwing that out there.
Because the humidity goes through you.
Oh, yeah.
It's a wetter cold than it is in the Northeast or mid-North Central.
Totally opposite from where we are here in Phoenix. Everybody says, it's 120 degrees, but it's a dry heat. But needless to say, 120 degrees is like walking into an oven.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter. I mean, I could be a pizza. So going into a brick oven, it's hot. Anything above 110 is hot. Yeah, it's dry. And we get our winters. Our winters are beautiful. I mean, and our fall, it starts cooling off. September, we might feel something like a little cooling off at night, in the morning. And then November gets better and better. And we could go down into the 40s as well. But being so hot during the summer, if you experience... To me, anything under like 75 is like cold. So it's all relative.
Right. Yeah, I mean, we'd be remiss not to mention, though, that as far as our climate goes, hurricanes are a reality. They happen. We hope that they won't come, and we hope that they won't be severe. But since I've lived here, I'd say we've had two really, really bad ones, and that was Katrina in 2005 and Ida in 2021. And I sure hope we don't have any bad ones this year, but it's something that your listeners should, I'm sure they're already aware, but that's just one of those things.
It's a possibility. It's like Florida. Have you guys had any insurance companies pull out like they have in Florida as well because of hurricanes?
Yeah, it's become a problem for the state because a lot of insurance companies have pulled out and homeowners insurance has gone up a lot. There's a state-funded insurance co-op, I guess, which is the insurer of last resort, and it is by law required to have premiums 10% higher than any for-profit insurer, which means that people get, if you can't get other insurance, you get hammered badly. Mm-hmm. So that's been a problem for people. And many of us, it depends on where you live in the city, but many people really need to have flood insurance as well, which isn't tremendously expensive, but with some recent changes is going up.
Mm-hmm. And if you're
so you have to think about it.
And
the good news is that compared to every place else, our housing is really cheap.
Right. And if you're moving to town, that's one thing to bear in mind is where in town you are, because the city is shaped like a bowl. So if you're kind of close to the river, like where Joe and I are, you're less likely to, like, I know this house is similar age to Joe's, and it's never flooded as far as I'm aware, but other parts of the city just flood regularly. So that's something to really look into if you're looking to buy real estate.
So I'm sure the city has mapped out of flood zones as well, right? And hurricane zones, maybe? I don't know. Or
they're
tide.
Comparable in the sense that hurricanes produce the flooding. Right. Jim and I both live along what's called the sliver on the river, where the centuries of sediment deposit have created natural levees. Our house has never flooded, and I guess Jim's hasn't either. But there are other parts of the city that even they flooded during Ida, which I don't know. I was my first hurricane ever. It was daunting, but I wasn't horrified by it. I mean, it wasn't great, but it wasn't awful.
But what I remember with Katrina, I don't want to turn this into something negative, but I remember in Katrina, there was the people on their roofs because the water was way up to the top of their building, of their home, which to me, it was unbelievable.
It was awful. It destroyed the city. It's amazing it's come back as well as it has.
Yeah. Yeah, I was surprised. I was there a few years ago, and it looked like it always looked.
Mm-hmm.
So good job in restoring stuff. So, okay, we found out about the climate. Is there anywhere nearby you could travel to get out of the heat?
No.
No, you're just...
I don't go to Maine. We have a lot of friends that go to Maine in the summer.
Maine. Okay, that's a far distance.
Now, you
yes,
can...
exactly.
You can drive for a couple of hours and get to a really nice beach where you can cool off in the Gulf of Mexico. But no, there's no escaping the heat in the deep south. You got to fly out for that.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Is living in an LGBTQ community important to you? And is there such thing in New Orleans, or is just everything very, I mean, I know it's LGBTQ friendly, but are there gayborhoods?
Yes.
I guess.
Yeah. I mean, historically the French Quarter was the gayborhood. And then over time, it kind of shifted. And I mean, it still is. There's been a lot of people who no longer live in the quarter because people are buying it, all the properties for investment, and so you can't afford it.
Right.
So people move to the Faubourg Marigny, which is still what I would say is that's really the gayborhood, but it's getting pricey. So people have moved further out to what's called the Bywater, and then even into St. Bernard Parish and Araby. But that whole stretch is all very gay. But there's gay people living throughout the city, everywhere, pretty much any part of town you can think of. But the gayborhoods are like the areas near and about the quarter and the Marigny. It's important to me, Mark. I moved here from a very small town of about 600 people. I'd never... you know, I grew up when there was no Will and Grace or no reference to gay people that I ever heard about that was anything but negative and terrible. And here I arrive at this town where people have created a community for me. I mean, I know they didn't do it for me, but they did it for all of us. And I'm super grateful to it. Whenever I go visit other cities, I went to go visit a friend out of state not too long ago. And I'm like, oh, this is cool. It's like, oh, wow, this place is dead. Like there's no life here. Something about being in New Orleans, not just the gay community, but just it's alive.
Live.
There's
energy.
There's so many downsides to it, but you can be whoever you want to be. You can look out the window and see somebody on a bicycle in a tutu and you're not going to bat an eyelash. Nobody bothers anybody about who they are. We love having the different types of people.
I think there's a real live and let live attitude across the city. It just being LGBTQ here matters less than any other place I've lived. And I've lived mostly in big cities, but here we're far more welcomed.
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, when I visited, I had no qualms of feeling out of place. In fact, I felt the opposite. I felt kind of embraced. My peeps are here. So it's something to really think about when you're retiring also and building community. I don't know about you, and not everybody's the same, but I, for one, would like to be around my peeps.
Right. Well, to be comfortable, I mean, we've been fortunate to meet a lot of people, both through No Age and through other means. And in terms of percentages, we're comparable to Phoenix and Tampa and Denver in terms of percentage of gay LGBTQ folks in our city. But it feels like it's a much higher percentage. We have friends throughout the city. They live in neighborhoods. Everyone knows they're gay. No one cares. There's a large elderly gay population here that has been active in, who worked in the universities or medical centers or teaching. And so we're well established, even if we haven't been as politically active as we might have been in other places.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I definitely agree with you. Like Phoenix, as a comparison, in Phoenix, where I live, we have a large, vibrant LGBTQ community, but it's not the same as if you go to New Orleans. It's just because New Orleans is kind of like it's out there. It's like open and like, this is my town and I'm going to show you what it's like. Whereas other areas of the country are a little bit more conservative and subdued.
We're conservative in a weird southern way, but we're also pretty open compared to other places.
Yeah. Okay. We talked about the bars also, mostly, of course, being in the French Quarter. How easy is it to make friends? So if I was just moving to New Orleans, what would be the ways that I could meet others in the LGBTQ community? Just do I look up No Age in the phone book and
yes,
send an email, or how do you do that?
I don't have a phone book, Mark.
Oh, that's right. Forget the phone book. Sorry about the phone book. I'm dating myself.
We've met a lot of people through No Age. We also met where we went to the Unitarian Universalist Church, and we met a fair number of people there. And then we've met people at, say, the Marinet Opera House. The weird thing is that New Orleans is small enough so that you meet people in all those places, at the same places, and they seem to all know each other. So we moved from Los Angeles, where even though Dan had lived there for 40 years, we didn't really know a lot of other gay couples. We know a lot of other gay couples and a lot of gay singles. And in the course of 5 years, we probably met 10 times as many people as we met in Los Angeles.
Yeah, and I think that's also, it's the same thing. These big cities, everybody drives, everything is car-centric. So you drive into your driveway, you go into your home, you don't meet anybody.
Right.
Unless you're outgoing and join these groups. Whereas New Orleans is more, to me, it's also, I know you need a car, but it's also a walking town. I think so. If you agree with me, I mean, in the French Quarter and different, whenever I've gone to New Orleans, I've never rented a car.
We live in a neighborhood in part specifically because it's entirely walkable. We know at some point 10 or 15 years from now, we won't want to drive anymore. So we can walk to the grocery store, to the drugstore, to good restaurants, to the hospital if we need to where I go to the gym. And if we don't want to walk, Uber works just fine.
Got it. How about you, Jim?
Well, I hate walking, but I'll drive if it's two blocks away. But no, Joe's right. I live not too far from him. And the hospital's right there. The drugstore's right there. I just got some po' boys a block away. It depends on where you are. As far as like the ease of making friends, I have found, just being over 40, that it's harder to maintain friendships. It's harder to build new ones. And I'm saying, oh, this is what they talk about when you read about working on maintaining friendships. But that being said, I think if you move to New Orleans and you're gay, lesbian, trans, if you get involved with one of the groups, maybe it's No Age, maybe it's, I don't know, PFLAG. There's a very active PFLAG chapter. There's the leather community. There's some women's groups. No women's bars, but there's like women's pop-up events. I think if you get involved in something, like pretty quickly you're going to make a circle of acquaintances and hopefully close friends. I haven't found it hard to continue meeting people, but that really only kicked off for me when I started getting more civic minded, so to speak, and volunteering for different organizations. But yeah, this is a very, very friendly town. If you're in the line at the grocery store, it's not unusual to have a conversation with the person behind you or the cashier. They won't look at you funny like they do in some places. I've learned to not be as friendly when I leave town as I am when I am here.
Also, for older gays, there's a prime timers group here. I'm aware of it, although I haven't gone to their lunches, but they have lunches twice a month. And we also have an MCA, Metropolitan Community Church here. Between that, the Unitarians, there's a great, tremendously welcoming Episcopal church here called St. Anna's. Again, you walk in there and 25% of the congregation is LGBTQ and very much welcome. So there's lots of places to meet people. And as I said, you oftentimes meet the same people in multiple places.
You got to start walking more, Jim.
Yeah.
6,000 steps.
Maybe when it cools off a little bit.
I don't blame you in the heat. In the heat, yeah, I don't walk here and I don't go out in the heat when it's 120.
Mm-hmm. Well, the other thing is we have great schools here. We have Loyola, we have Tulane, and yep. I've taken courses at Loyola because they have a deal where you pay the administrative fee and you can take courses for not the tuition costs but the administrative fee. And those schools are close into the city, so it's easy to do.
I remember working when I worked on Wall Street, when somebody would come in asking for a job as a trainee and came from Tulane. I was like, no, is that a party college? And everybody seemed to have the notion that it's a party college.
Yes, it is.
Is that where you went to?
Well, I got my master's degree from there. I think a lot of it is a very good school. It's one of the top schools in the country. I mean, they sometimes call it the Harvard of the South. I don't know if that's saying much, but but it is tradition. Like if you look at like a list of the top party schools, Tulane will consistently be on there. I'm proud to have my master's from Tulane. My partner is a historian at Tulane, but yeah, they have some parties. Well, not on the campus necessarily, but there's lots of partying going on for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. So that's another good thing. And another draw is like, I like college towns because mm-hmm. college towns make the city vibrant, mm-hmm. in my opinion. It brings young blood. It brings great restaurants and bars. So definitely a plus to live in a college town.
And we've had a real influx into New Orleans of young adults who are just post-college, who've really embraced the culture and in some ways transformed it. But we've got a lot of young people here. We have our fair share of older people, but we have a lot of young people that really inject excitement and enthusiasm into the city.
Yeah, and I'd piggyback back on that to say that I think that the youth are the more politically active of our community, the young LGBT, queer, trans folks especially are very active politically.
Everybody should be active politically these days and make sure that we get what we need.
Or just vote. You don't have to vote. You don't have to riot. You can just go to the ballot box.
Exactly. That's what I mean. Just get out and vote.
Well, we've been really lucky here in Louisiana. The past two terms, we're like the only state in the Deep South with a Democrat governor. And that's he's really quite centrist and sided more with the pro-life side of things when that came down last year. But he also, one of the first things he did was try to pass like a statewide non-discrimination policy. It got
very important.
He vetoed. There was recently some anti-transgender, the don't say gay stuff, the anti-trans stuff.
Yeah.
Some of that is happening now. And he's been very supportive of us. So we're just, it's going to be really tough to see what comes next when his term ends.
But yeah. We're a pretty blue city.
And no, we're an oasis.
Yes, exactly.
What was that?
We're an oasis of blue in a red state.
Yeah.
I don't know. Is that true of Phoenix as well?
It is, pretty much. Yeah. We're kind of purple now. But yeah, Phoenix is such a huge city. I don't even recall how many millions in population, but it's so spread out. It's like very sprawled out. The city of Phoenix, where I live in the Midtown area, it's like our own little bubble here. So it's very blue here. And within pretty much of all of the city boundaries. But if you go into the outer city, the metro areas, they seem to be a little bit more red.
Yep.
All right. So what's the local economy like in New Orleans? Tell us approximately how much does it cost to buy a home? 2-bedroom, 2-bath, let's say. Have any idea?
Actually, we just had an appraisal done because we're doing some renovation. And in our neighborhood, other 2-bedroom, 2-baths were between $550 and $750. You can pay a lot more than that. But you can also pay less than that. You can, in some perfectly good neighborhoods, get a 2-bedroom, 2-bath for $350. So compared to Los Angeles or New York or Chicago or DC, it's much cheaper.
Mm-hmm. My research on this shows that the average home cost in Orleans Parish is $360,000. Places like Uptown are going to be more expensive. The French Quarter is almost prohibitively expensive now. If you're looking to rent a 1-bedroom apartment, it's probably an average of about $1,500 a month.
That's not bad.
Utilities are about $200 to $300. As far as the economy, it's largely a tourism-based economy.
Right.
I'd say that was the biggest moneymaker that we have is people coming to visit.
Yeah.
We have a huge convention. So I first came to New Orleans for various conventions that I came to, and we have a huge convention business and a huge hotel business. And of course, they support the restaurants and the entertainment. But I'm trying to think about the younger people on the street that I live in. One's a nurse, one's a resident, two are in the entertainment business, I think a couple lawyers. But yeah, the economy is driven by tourism and service industry.
Yeah, and Joe, there's quite a bit of health. There are a lot of healthcare facilities, clinics, big hospitals. There's Ochsner, there's Touro, there's
LCMC.
LCMC has been bringing a lot of, what do you call it? They're a conglomerate that's taken over a lot of the but there's plenty of healthcare jobs here in town. If you're a doctor, nurse, social worker,
there's also plenty of healthcare if you're old. The quality of healthcare here is really good. We were skeptical, having been at Kaiser in Los Angeles. We were accustomed to really good healthcare that was well integrated. And Ochsner, where we go at least, is on Epic, which is a centralized data management system used by hospitals. So we get excellent care, and they've just signed an agreement with MD Anderson to bring their cancer expertise here as well. We feel well taken care of.
And they've got, Ochsner specifically has a very high rating with HRC's Equality Index. It might even be 100. I could be wrong about that. But I think all of their staff are required to get some form of cultural competence training. But there's plenty of gay-friendly doctors too. I mean, please, half the doctors are gay.
How close is the nearest hospital?
6 blocks.
Oh, wow.
It's about 2 blocks from me, but it depends on where you are. But there's a variety of different hospitals around town.
But if you needed one, Jim, you'd drive there and Joe would walk.
I would walk. I actually walk to the gym that I go to is located in the hospital that Jim is nearest to. So I can walk there when it's 110 degrees.
Got it. I'm busting him. I'm sorry.
That's my partner makes fun of me all the time. He's like, you will not drive, walk anywhere.
Tell us how about your electric bills? Are they high because of air conditioning and heating? Maybe not much of heating, but.
I would say I'm paying more than I did in Los Angeles, but we lived in a part of Los Angeles where we really didn't need the heat or the air conditioning very much.
What's more? Give us an example.
Like $300 a month, which I shouldn't
substantial.
Complain about. Yeah.
But how big is your house?
It's not that big. It's like 1,800 square feet. But okay, these houses
nice
weren't built to be insulated. So the wall, if you live in New England, your houses are insulated. These aren't.
Gotcha.
Yeah, it's expensive to keep the house cool. Like Joe, I live in an old house, and it's much harder to keep it cool.
Yep. I feel your pain.
Hmm.
All right. So how about taxes, real estate taxes?
Speaking for ourselves, because we're over 65, we have something called a homestead exemption, mm-hmm. which means that our taxes don't rise. And they are, I lived in a comparably sized house in Los Angeles, and our taxes here are half what they were there.
Oh, that's pretty good.
Yeah, no, it's that the taxes are good.
Excellent. Excellent. How about LGBTQ businesses? Are you all tied together with the, I know we have an LGBTQ Chamber of Commerce, right, in New Orleans?
Mm-hmm.
So you all talk to one another as well. And are there many LGBTQ businesses in New Orleans?
I mean, yeah, there is. It's called the Gulf South LGBT Chamber of Commerce here in town. Yeah, I'd say there's a fair amount of businesses owned by LGBT people. I mean, there's the bars for one thing, but like Joe mentioned earlier, we just have a higher percentage of people who identify that way. Naturally, there's more businesses that are LGBT owned and friendly. You'll see a lot of rainbow flags and stickers around town at different kinds of places. I don't know if that necessarily means they're owned, but they're
friendly.
By and large, very friendly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, okay. I can't think of a place that we could go in town where we'd feel any sense of discrimination. And if we did, we'd post it and the business would suffer.
Yeah, it's like everyone's going to make a cake for you.
Everyone will make a cake.
That's good. Let's have a party. Jim, I know you like to party.
I wish I could do it as much as I used to.
Yep. Yeah, don't we all? Okay. We talked a little bit about the arts and culture scene. Is there like a theater, a live theater?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
In New Orleans?
We get, so there's the Broadway show tours that come through the Sanger. There's a Le Petit Theater that does its own, and it's an Actors' Equity Theater, I think. There's a couple. There's Jefferson Performing Arts Center, which is not far away. There's the Marigny Opera House, which has great stuff. I don't know what else, Jim.
Well, we have this wonderful local theater company called the Tennessee Williams Theater Company. And
right.
it's It's run by two guys, really great guys, who they put on Tennessee Williams plays and plays that are related to Tennessee Williams in some way. They always sell out all the shows. It's a lot of fun. They just had one, as Joe mentioned, the Marini Opera House. They also have one coming up at Loyola. But yeah, there's a very active community theater. And like you said, the tours as well.
And both Loyola and Tulane put on summer lyric theaters.
And they do great job. The Tulane lyric theater especially. I've been to some really great stuff there.
Mm-hmm. Do you guys?
It's not New York, but it's good.
Yeah. How about museums? Do you have your fair share of museums?
New Orleans Museum of Art, which is pretty good. And what's the one downtown in the Warehouse District? Southern Art.
Oh, the Ogden Museum of Southern Art. Oh, and then, of course, one of the biggest draws is the World War II Museum, which is, that's a world-class, state-of-the-art museum that brings...
I think it's part of Smithsonian, isn't it?
What's the name of it?
The World War II Museum.
World War II.
I don't know. It's very well healed, mm-hmm. and enormous and always growing. And it's a great museum. I'm not the kind of person that's like into war stuff, but mm-hmm. like if you have somebody visiting town, like that's always a great place to take them to, because it's just so impressive.
We also have a nice street full of galleries, Julia Street, and a number of galleries that represent a number of good local artists, who some of whom have national acclaim. We actually just had something called White Linen Night, where people dress up in white linen, because if you live in New Orleans, you have to have a white linen suit, and you stroll through the galleries. And even though it was too hot this year, it's a lively arts town.
Do you own a white linen suit?
Yes.
Jim?
I've got a seersucker.
That's good enough.
Those are the two. You have to have one or the other.
That's good enough. All right. So you're not going to be bored with the culture and arts scene in New Orleans at all.
I can't imagine. I mean,
it really depends on where you live before. If you're accustomed to being able to walk to Lincoln Center, yes, you might be bored. But if you're not accustomed to that, no, you won't be.
Let's talk about the food scene a little bit more. Can you get international cuisine, any type of cuisine in New Orleans, and instead of just Creole stuff?
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's an Ethiopian restaurant right next to me, and then there's a snowball stand right next to that, and then there's a po'boy shop. Yeah, it's like what Joe's just saying. If you're used to New York or London, no, it's not going to be. There aren't going to be Michelin stars, obviously, but it's, you can pretty much get whatever you want. What do you think, Joe?
Well, we have a fairly sizable Vietnamese community here, so you can certainly get plenty of pho. There's good Thai restaurants here. There are good Indian restaurants here. There are a couple of restaurants that have eclectic menus that are tasty menus that we've been to that we really like. Yes, there is there's a tradition of New Orleans cuisines, but we routinely go to a great taco place on Sunday night. And having lived in LA, I know what a good taco is, and these are really good. So yeah, we have plenty of places to eat, not just traditional cuisine, although I'd say that's the best.
Got it. Yep. I would agree. And what is it? Café du Monde that I had my beignets at?
Yes.
Yep. I know it's a touristy place, but I know that.
All right. We all like beignets.
It's good. But it's good.
Yeah. It's very touristy. But it is good. Beignets are excellent. How far are you from the airport?
It takes me 22 minutes to get there by car.
Oh, that's...
I have a friend who flies in frequently, so we actually know that.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that's 20 minutes is great.
And it's a new airport too. It just built a few years ago, in fact.
Is there a lot of traffic in New Orleans?
Not too bad.
No. And if you've been on the 405 in Los Angeles or the BQE in New York. No.
Okay. I mean, like you said, I mean, most things that you want to get to, you can get there in 15 minutes. I mean, that's a generalization. Sometimes traffic can be worse, like in rush hour, but that's never really an issue.
That's great.
That's true.
Now, I can't promise you that you're going to get where you're going when keep your axle intact, because we have quite a few potholes, which is why I've got my Subaru with 8 inches of clearance. The streets are terrible. I mean, we've talked a lot about the fun stuff. Infrastructure, we're not great on. I mean, it's hard to maintain streets that are built right over reclaimed swamps or when the sea level is right there. And the really hot weather and the changes, the streets are bad. And the regional transit is very unreliable. And I mean, if you're uptown you're going to the quarter, you can take the streetcar, which is nice and romantic and fun. But again, you don't know when it's going to show up.
Yeah, it's not really reliable.
It's becoming more bicycle friendly. It was not at all when I first moved here, but that's beginning to change now. But it's not. We don't have good roads.
We have friends who just moved here from Chicago who rode their bikes every place during Mardi Gras. So yes, people do ride bikes a lot. If you stick to the quieter streets, you're fine.
I don't think the potholes, correct me if I'm wrong, is just in New Orleans. I remember driving, I think we drove, I don't know, we drove from Florida, and I could swear as soon as we hit Louisiana border, the potholes began.
Yeah, no, this is correct. Yes.
They're really bad here.
Yeah,
there are people who post here where a pothole has existed long enough that people will put decorations out in them. it's absolutely ridiculous.
Yeah. If you're on Instagram, you should. Well, I don't know if I can curse, but it's look at this effing street is one of the popular Instagram accounts. So like it'll show it, like what Joe said. It's like a pothole, and there's like one of those orange cones. It's got a wig on it. There's beads and stuff.
I got to check that out.
Yeah,
that's awesome. All right.
Another one of the tougher parts of things here is that. There's quite a bit of crime, and I know that was my next. That's everywhere right now, but New Orleans is consistently in the top most violent cities.
Why do you think that is?
Well, I haven't personally experienced any kind of violence of that sort. I've never been mugged or carjacked, but it's happening quite a bit. I don't know. I think there's a lot of poverty. I think a lot of it has to do with a lot of programs in this state were destroyed by the Bobby Jindal administration. We still haven't recovered from what he did to this state. New Orleans government is notoriously ineffective. The history of racial inequality, I don't think there's any one answer for why that's the case that it is. But
the thing that's most surprising to me is that crime is driven, Jim, correct me if you disagree, but crime is driven by youth here. When you see examples of people being arrested for carjackings or thefts, what you see is that they tend to be between, and I'm not exaggerating, between 12 and 25.
Yeah, that's correct. It's almost always teenagers. And I think that there's a crisis of youth going on across the country. And when you look at what a legacy of inequality, I mean, the legacy of slavery, the legacy of segregation in the South and just the current economy in general, and just kind of living in sort of the apocalyptic present that we're all going through, the youth don't have the same supports that maybe we did.
Yeah.
Growing up.
Yeah, I hear you. Yeah, it's a problem. It's definitely a problem. How about homeless? Do you have a homeless issue?
Proportionately, I guess, yes. We drive down a street where there's a pretty large homeless encampment. Again, not like Los Angeles, but I think it is proportional to the size of the population.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Is the government doing anything to help that situation at all? You said New Orleans government wasn't the greatest.
Well, I mean, like, I believe they're cleaning out one of the encampments right now. And I think it's because next weekend is a huge event that's bringing in hundreds of millions of dollars. So I don't know. I'm not involved in that. I couldn't say, but it's, I certainly see a lot more homeless people than I did in 96 when I moved here. I could be wrong about that. Maybe
I think that's everywhere too.
But it definitely seems worse than it once was. And this is not about the homeless, but about as far as crime. This city, I call it sort of like a checkered board. People say, well, what's the safe neighborhood and what's the unsafe neighborhood? And that's really, really difficult to say, because there'll be a series of blocks that are relatively safe, and then there'll be two blocks that are very unsafe that I wouldn't want to be going through. But if you're in your car and you're driving, which obviously I am because I don't walk, you want to have your car door locked, because the carjackings have been at unprecedented levels for several years now.
Wow.
You got to be very careful to lock your car.
Wow.
Even when you're driving.
That's scary. I mean, being in your car, driving and getting it hiked.
We've just seen too many stories about what's happened, and some deaths have occurred. So I'm a lot more vigilant than I was 10 years ago. You definitely have to be careful where you're walking after dark. And it's always good to stay with groups of people if you can.
Gotcha. So do you wish that you had something in New Orleans that you might have had elsewhere that you don't have in New Orleans?
I'm going to let Joe answer that, because Joe's lived in more places than I have.
So one of the things that was true in pretty much every place I've lived before is access to big open parks. In New York, I lived across from Prospect Park. In Los Angeles, we lived in Silver Lake, which has a huge park nearby. In D.C., I lived along the Potomac. Here, even though we are trying now to develop more of the riverscape, and there's some initiatives from the aquarium and the zoo to develop the river, but it's less accessible than parks are less accessible here than I've seen in other places. Jim, though, your group walks up in Audubon Park. So uptown, there are parks.
Well, I mean, Audubon Park, I'd put that up against some of the most beautiful parks that I've seen around the world.
I agree.
It's a gorgeous, gorgeous park. There's a big golf course in the center of it, but there's a running path, a walking path where a walking group meets. And City Park is pretty huge too, and there's a lot of activities to do there. I'd say those are the two. I prefer Audubon Park just because of the beauty of the old oak trees, but City Park has a lot to recommend it. It's got the New Orleans Museum of Art nearby, sculpture gardens, and I think I like our parks here. I'm not that impressed with Central Park compared to Audubon Park, but that's just me. I'm biased. I like things that are pretty.
And Joe, I forgot that you lived in Brooklyn, huh?
In Park Slope.
Park Slope.
12 or 13 years over time, and directly across from the park. It was great.
It's beautiful, yeah.
I got spoiled.
I lived in Brooklyn myself, in Sheepshead Bay.
Ah, it's a great borough. It's a great borough to live in.
Yep, I grew up there since I was born I actually moved to Sheepshead Bay. I think I was 8 years old until I moved out, which was in my 30s or 40s.
Wow.
Yeah. Yep. So for the most part, and I lived and I worked in New York City up until 2014.
Okay. I was there till 2013. And then I moved to Los Angeles because I had met Dan.
Yep. And we moved to Florida, which was a mistake. And then we moved to Phoenix. Any cons besides the negatives that we did discuss? Any other cons that you can think of?
I don't think there's anything I haven't brought up that, I mean, like infrastructure would be nice, but I already mentioned that. It's one of those things, like it depends on what's important to you. I mean, I've had really great friends who've left town because they wanted a place where the bus showed up on time. They wanted to be in a place where there's no potholes or where the weather is not so hot. I think it really comes down to what your personality is. If you want to be around culture and history and fun and you can deal with some of the downsides, then it's definitely, this is your town. I mean, I'll reiterate it again. I've traveled a little bit and I find myself even in these really nice towns that do have all these great things. I'm bored and I want to come home. I want to be back here. And it's hard to imagine living in another place.
Just froze up a little. All right, gentlemen. In wrapping up, what would you say to our audience if they were thinking about moving to New Orleans?
So I'm on your Facebook group, and so I read all the comments there. And of the places I've lived, which have been many, this is the best place of all. Not because it has the best of everything, but because it has as much good things as you could imagine in a place that's affordable and friendly and welcoming.
Okay. Yeah. How about you, Jim?
I hope you, that I'm not cutting out again, but I would say if you're thinking about living here and you have questions, feel free to reach out to No Age, visit our website, shoot me an email. I'd be happy to talk to you on the phone or introduce you to folks. And I'm sure Joe would be it as well. Yeah. We'd love to have you. Or at least come visit.
So let us know, where could we find you on social media? What's the website address?
So for No Age, it's noagenola.org. We're also on Facebook and Instagram.
For us, it's a homeamongfriends.org. And thanks to Jim, we're also on Facebook.
All right, gentlemen. Well, thank you so much for your time. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Yeah, and it was great. It's a great education. And we'll talk soon.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Have a good one.
You too.
Thank you for listening to the Where Do Gays Retire podcast. If you enjoyed today's episode, please subscribe to our podcast and consider making a donation by clicking the coffee cup on any page at www.wheredogaysretire.com. Each cup of coffee that you buy costs $5 and goes towards helping us continue the podcast. Thank you for your continued support.